Well, good morning and welcome to Local Matters. Today's discussion topic is education matters in the Upper Cumberland. And my special guest is Corby King, the Director of Schools for Putnam County. Director King, we are honored to have you back on the show.
It's always an honor to be here. Thank you, Dr. Bell.
Well, it's great to have you back. It really is. We want to talk about a pretty wide-ranging set of things today, and especially the governor's special called session at the legislature on education. And I'm delighted that he called that session to focus on education during the pandemic, but it's a hot topic and a lot of things to talk about.
Yes.
But first, let's just give you a chance to give us sort of a current picture on the COVID-19 and pandemic situation in Putnam County schools.
Sure. So, fortunately, we've been able to remain in school. We've been in from day one. Just a testament to our teachers, our staff members, the nurses in our buildings, and the parents who are sending the students who are staying home when they should be, sending them to school, the students who are wearing a mask every day, that are socially distancing, washing their hands, all of those things working together, we've been able to be in school from the beginning. The past few weeks, we've been pleasantly surprised with our numbers since Christmas break have been declining. We've remained low with the number of positive cases, students and staff, and especially staff members. Much of that is probably related to, you know, our staff members. The governor moved staff members, K-12 staff members, into the 75 and up group. So a little over half of our faculty and staff have been able to receive the vaccine.
Excellent.
Which is
excellent.
Huge for our system.
Yes,
it's huge
it
for our students.
Huge for our county.
Absolutely. And our numbers in the county and in the region have been trending downward as well. So we feel good about that. Definitely not out of the woods yet, but we hope that we have peaked and have come over the hill and on the right side of things. So.
Well, that's great, and we'll come back to local schools and talk a bit about the students and some of the challenges they have and things like that. But let's focus just a bit on the governor's special legislative session and some of the issues that they talked about. What's your take at this point on the session that was held
We're
in January?
We're still working through it. You know, there's a lot that came out of those bills and a lot to still interpret.
Yes.
We're still waiting on the State Department to provide a little more guidance on what exactly is going to be expected from us at the local level, from a local district. There's a lot of good things that came out of that. When you talk about the accountability measures in a year like this, to place accountability on the teachers of the schools, or to say, you know, that you have to hit a certain mark when students have been in and out of their classroom, whether they've been infected with COVID themselves or someone in their family and they've had to quarantine or isolate and they've missed 10 days, 14 days. There's just been a lot of disruption throughout the year for students, teachers who have been in and out, whether themselves or someone in their family have been impacted by COVID. It would be hard to have any validity to the test. We still have to test. We're going to do that. We know the state wants a benchmark. They want to measure. That's fine. We're okay with the test.
Yeah, there's got to be some feedback. But
sure, and we need that feedback. But let's not say that this school is on track or failing or whatever, you know, those accountability measures they say.
This would be a bad year to be punitive on that test.
Absolutely, and to try to tie any type of funding or measures or increased scrutiny on schools because of that, it just wouldn't be accurate or fair. So that was a good piece of legislation for us. Also on teacher evaluations, waiving some of the accountability on that. Again, teachers have enough stress this year. They don't need additional stress put on them. Just doing the job. It's a difficult job in any year. This year has been.
They never signed up for a year like this, did they?
No, sir. So, again, a good piece of legislation from that. We're still concerned about some of the other legislation, the summer camps, what we're going to be required to provide, who's going to be required to attend those. We haven't seen what that's going to look like yet. There's a lot of debate. It appears we're going to be required to provide a summer camp for grades K through 8. our teachers are tired. I don't know how we're going to staff it.
Yes.
That's, you know, in the conversations I'm having with the department and others, you know, who's going to teach? Because our teachers need a break. This summer, more than ever, we need a summer break. Same thing with our students. We've been in school from day one. We haven't been home. We've not been out. We've not been on some of the hybrid models that you've seen where we've been home for 2-3 weeks at a time in remote, which is a challenging environment in and of itself. But that's not been us. We've been in school and in person. So to come back and follow right at the end of the year with a 4-to-6-week summer camp, I think is unrealistic. I don't know if that's going to get very far, what the state's going to actually require, but those are the conversations we're having, and we still have to work through that. Some of the reading initiative, again, they're targeting learning loss. That's kind of a sore subject with me as well. We've been in school, and to say this is learning loss, I mean, I don't know where they're getting the data, where they're getting the information. It's not from us, and it's not from our students. We do have learning gaps. We've had those for a long time. This is not new. These are things that we're targeting. We're taking steps to improve our student outcomes. We do that every year through our school improvement plan process. We've been more focused than ever on helping our students reach on-target goals, on-track goals. So to come in and say that we have this learning loss due to COVID, I just feel is inaccurate. And I don't think it's fair to our students and our teachers to say that.
And it's based on nationwide, not local data.
That is correct.
It's not Putnam County or even the state of Tennessee in a lot of cases.
That is correct. It is not. So, you know, those are things we're still, again, waiting on the State Department to provide a little more guidance before. But I am appreciative in saying all of that still of the General Assembly making education a focus.
Yeah, I agree.
That we do need to have a focus on education. There are things that need to be in place, and giving us some flexibility, that is key. Give us flexibility at the local level to make decisions that impact our students and our teachers. That's what we want to see. And I'm hoping as these bills work through or we get the guidance for how to enact these bills, that we're going to have flexibility at the local level.
And they complimented teachers on the hard work they're doing.
Absolutely.
And did some steps forward on teacher pay. I know probably TEA didn't think much about the steps they took, but at least they took what they thought were some positive steps for teacher pay.
They did. There's still work to do in that area. And it's, as always, a little bit concerning the approach they took. You know, they added 2% to the BEP instructional component.
Right.
We spend a lot of time. That does not equate to a 2% raise. That is not a 2% salary increase. That messaging is difficult. The BEP formula is a kind of a convoluted formula to begin with on how we receive funding from the State Department. But when they raise 2% on the instructional component, what they say we can use that for is only our certified teachers, staff members, nurses, certified staff and nurses that are included in the instructional formula. Well, we have 80 to 90 certified positions outside of the BEP formula. For example, one glaring area is the nurses. You know, they provide 3 nurses for a district our size. Well, we have 18. So, you know, to fund that 2% raise for all of our certified staff, we have to divide that. You know, it's not going to be 2% by the time we divide that out. And we will do our best to communicate. You know, I'll be transparent with the number that we received from the state. We received our allocation last week. Mark McReynolds, our CFO, and I will publicize that number, but also how we're dividing that out among our staff members. Once we get a little clearer guidance from state on how we need to divide that among those above the BEP formula.
And that's tough because a lot of districts have had to go even in a normal year, way beyond what's in the formula in terms of staffing.
I think there might be 2-3 districts in the state of Tennessee that are at the staff at the BP. You have to remember that's a funding spending plan, or not a spending plan, but a funding formula. And it funds, you know, those 2-3 that fund at that basic, and it's a very basic education is all that it's funding. And those that are funding at that level are the very small districts. They might have 1-2 schools in their entire district, 3 schools. You know, there's less than 1,000 students in an entire district. Well, they might fund at a very basic level, just what's in the formula. but a district that's our size with 20 schools and 11 elementary schools, you know, I can't fund partial teachers, a 0.2 in this school, a 0.3 in this school based on the population or at this grade level. So anytime you go outside of that one school with this one grade band of students, you're funding above the BEP formula. And we do that across at elementary, middle, and then high school as well. So.
And it's tough on the state, I know, to try to find an equitable formula when they've got a school system like Shelby County that's so big and so complex.
Absolutely.
And then a smaller counties, so much smaller than Putnam, that are also in that same formula, and they try to make it equitable. But yes. It's really, really hard to do that.
It really is. And any tweak, and we realize any tweak they make to that formula, it's going to benefit some districts. It's going to negatively impact others. So you always hope when they start tweaking the formula that you're going to be on that positive impact side and not on the negative impact. But at least they're looking at it. They're trying to fund. They're trying to give us some help and benefit in the salary component and other things.
And we've got an entire legislative session ahead of us. Not everything was done in the month of January, so we'll have a lot
other
more
bills.
Fireworks yet.
Yes, sir.
Yet to go through. Well, this is a good discussion. This is Local Matters. We're talking to Corby King, the director of schools from Putnam County, and we're talking about local education matters today. We've been focusing on the special legislative session, but we're going to come back and talk more at the personal level about our students here in Putnam County and the students in the classroom and the teachers and parents and some of the challenges that they're currently facing. This is Local Matters. We'll be right back.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. OfficeMart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. OfficeMart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at OfficeMart.
Well, welcome back to Local Matters. We're talking to Corby King. And, Corby, before the break, we were talking about the legislative session. I'll get that right. Some of the good work the legislature is doing, never perfect, and never focused on a given county. And so they've got a tough job there, but, at least they are focusing on education. That's a good thing.
And I want to say before we completely leave that too, we're very fortunate in our region. You know, the legislators that represent our area with Representative Williams, Representative Sexton, Senator Bailey, they listen to us.
They do
hear from our local group, you know, what we need in Putnam County. And I'm very appreciative of that. And I want to say that before we move on, because I am on the phone, you know, text, phone calls. I've got their numbers. They've got my number. If there's a question when they're in session, they're at least listening before they move forward with some of this.
So. And I know those folks are advocates for for education,
yes,
and for just for our county and our region. So kudos to them. They've got a hard job.
Yes.
And we appreciate the good work that they do. Well, speaking of good work, my gosh, students, teachers, parents, this has been a year ago. We were just thinking about the future, and we didn't know there'd be a tornado. We didn't know there'd be a pandemic. The world has certainly changed in
Absolutely.
This past year. It's just
still speechless a little bit.
Yeah, speechless. That's a good way to
yes.
good way to put it. What do you think the toughest challenge for the kids has been? And that probably is different from a high schooler than a kindergarten student, but what do you think?
That's hard for me to answer. I'll say the reason that it is hard, every student is so different in how they have approached this. Our students are resilient. They have been amazing coming back into the buildings. I believe the hardest thing was the isolation, the time away from their friends, the time away from their peers. That was very difficult. You know, that shut down in the spring, and then you go right into summer, not getting to wrap up the end of school year, saying bye to their friends, saying, I'll see you again when we come back in the fall, not being sure if we're going to come back in the fall. Some of the uncertainty was very difficult for our students. That first week of school, I won't ever forget walking in the buildings, even though they were wearing masks, which, you know, a lot of folks were upset about that. Our students were fine. When I walked in the buildings, you could see the smiles through the mask. You could see the smiles in the eyes. And really, Dr. Bell, that still continues.
Yes.
Our students want to be in school and they want to be in class. Now, they love snow days and they're like, well, ready for a weekend. You know, those type things are still normal. But given the choice between being at home and having to learn in a remote environment like we did last spring and being in school and being there in person, our kids want to be in school. And that's a testament to our teachers, our faculty and staff as well for providing an environment where the students want to be. I think that's been the biggest challenge for them, just some of the uncertainty around all of this. This has been an enormously challenging year for our teachers, and they've risen to the occasion, as they do. I mean, teachers, you know, they care about our community, and they love the community. They love their students. They get to know them. They know their families. They engage with them. They spend time with them, and they care. So when their students are hurting, they're hurting. When the students are experiencing fun, exciting things in their lives, the teachers experience fun and exciting things along with their students. And we have to remember, our teachers have personal lives outside of school too, and they have struggles and uncertainties around COVID and the environment.
And they may have two or three kids in the somewhere in the system.
Absolutely. So, you know, trying to put those personal issues aside and come to school ready to work every day and to love on these kids when there may be uncertainty in the home with a spouse that might or might not have lost a job that's related to COVID, or a child that may or may not be quarantined and they might have to take time off to care for that child. There are so many challenges that we've just been presented with this year. And with each one, our teachers continue to rise above the challenges. They continue to come to work and they continue to put the best interests of their students at the forefront. And that is just a huge testament to our school system and the teachers that we have.
Yeah, I think the teachers are our heroes. We want to celebrate the healthcare workers and all that they've done this year. But teachers are a hero in their own right.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
Well, and speaking of heroes, parents have had an interesting year too. As a grandparent, have watched my children and their children. And it's been a challenging year for parents.
Absolutely. You know, and again, the uncertainty with parents and trying to make plans. As a parent, we all know that there are times that, you know, there might be a snowstorm and we have to take 2 or 3 days out, or in our area flooding or something like that, where schools are going to close, or a child gets sick and have to be out for a few days with a stomach virus or strep or the flu. Nothing like the phone call that, oh, your child is going to be quarantined, or you need to quarantine because they've been exposed to COVID, and so now you're going to be at home for 14 days or 10 days and have an extended period, and what do you do about an education during that time, and how do you connect with teachers? That has been a crazy challenge for parents and for teachers and for all of us to work through, but we've done that. Our school board working with us again to keep students in school as much as possible. That has been a big benefit, but we still have those that have been impacted by COVID, whether it's been in their home or a student themselves might have COVID. Where the educational process has been disrupted and parents have had to pivot and work with teachers to learn how to use the online tools and how to navigate that, whatever process is in place.
And that's been a challenge for parents. A lot of times the student knows more about the online tool than the parent knows.
Absolutely. The hard thing is just if you're home and you're doing that, making sure that they're in their Google Classroom doing the work, not on YouTube watching videos whatever game they might be playing. When these kids are really adept at hiding screens and moving,
they
and parents walk in the room and, I'm doing my homework, Mom. And then they get the phone call from the teacher. Your child's not turning anything in. They're not submitting assignments. And we've heard this a lot. You know, parents are like, but they're online. They're doing the work. I see them doing the work. You might want to check because they're not submitting the work. They may be doing it, but it's not getting back So there have been challenges around that. And if parents are working, that's really difficult. You know, not many grandparents are equipped to supervise and to make sure that children are getting the education that they need during the school day.
It's been a challenge, and tributes to everyone who have stepped up during this time. And I know not every house environment has a supportive environment for the student when they're trying to do their homework. And they may not have the technology to do in a lot of cases, too.
That's correct. And we've expended a lot of resources, a lot of money. You know, the federal government, we received a large pool of money at the beginning of the year, $2.7 million. We've recently received an additional $9.2 million. But out of that initial allocation, $2.7 million, we have purchased devices to move our system to a one-to-one. We've not received all of those yet because everybody across the country is doing the same thing. So those devices are on back order. But we're working so that if you're in a home and you don't have a device, and our education anymore really depends on that if you're at home for any length of time. So we provide a device for the student. If they're at home, if you don't have internet access, we provide a hotspot when the child goes out. We've purchased a little over 500 hotspots in the district just for situations where if a student has to quarantine, has to go out at any given time, or if they're on a remote learning path, we can provide a hotspot for them, you know, make sure that they still keep up with the education while they're out. So.
Well, that's great. It's amazing how we talk about hotspots and Zoom conferences and things today that we wouldn't have thought about in the same context 2 years ago.
Even a year ago.
You're right.
We've all become Zoom masters. How we use Zoom. You know, that was a tool that we used occasionally. And I think about from us at the district level, occasionally with some conference calls with maybe a vendor. But now it's a regular thing for professional development or just meetings. I have biweekly chats with our principals through Zoom.
Yeah.
We have lots of meetings with supervisors through Zoom. We don't have to bring everybody from the school to the office now. They can be in their office at their school in Monterey or Baxter, or if it's across town in Cookeville, and I can be in my office and we don't all have to come together. We can hook up on Zoom. And sure.
This is Education Matters. We're talking to Corby King, Director of Schools for Putnam County, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Local Matters. We are talking to Corby King. And Corby, right before the break, we were talking about how technology and other things in our environment have changed during this pandemic, talking specifically about Zoom and Zoom conferences. But how do you think 5 years out, 10 years out, how will education have been changed by this pandemic environment?
Sure. So one of the immediate changes that we have seen, we have a lot of families who have chosen remote learning that we think will stay, that have been successful. We had lots that chose that struggled and it was not successful. We will all say that nothing will replace that in-person learning, that in-person experience for the overwhelming majority of our students. In school, in person is where they need to be. But we do have a population of students and families who have thrived in that home online environment and have done well. That's a small number. But, you know, I can anticipate within our school system, you know, still remaining around that, you know, 8, 10, 12% of families who have thrived in this environment wanting to remain in that online environment. So our challenge as a district is to provide that, to provide an avenue where they can still remain online, to do that at home. It's almost like a homeschool setting that has worked for them, but the resources are there. We're providing a teacher. We're providing the curriculum. We're providing a device in a lot of cases if it's needed, resources that just weren't available in a homeschool setting before this. Mm-hmm. So I can see that there still will be a small number of families that have done well in this, that it has worked for, and that they will want to continue. And so we're making plans moving forward to support that segment of education. Again, that program will grow over the next 5 to 10 years. You know, as we look, and especially as you get into the upper grades and university level, you know, how are we meeting student needs in that virtual environment rather than being in person? Again, there's a small number. So if we have students who are learning online rather than in person, it might delay the need for building new buildings as much. Now, we've got one or two, we've got to get built in Putnam County right away. We are growing. We anticipate that growth to come back. We dropped students this year. This is the first time in several years. I know personally in the last 10 to 12, this is the first time we've seen enrollment decline. We tend to grow 1% to 2% per year. This year, we are down about 340 students that we lost to homeschool. We anticipate many of those will come back, not remote learning through us, but an actual outside homeschool environment. And we expect them to come back to us. When they do, we've got to have physical space for them. We also know in Putnam County, we're growing. We're still building. Homes can't get up fast enough. Construction permits continue to grow. Families are moving in. So we need to be building a new school now. We know that. We're ready to come back to the county commission. We had that on the table before all of this hit last year. We put that on the back burner. But we're ready to come back, looking at our future growth, our future enrollment needs. We need that new building.
And that new school will go in the southwest
quadrant, yes, sir, it will.
Quadrant, right?
Yes, sir, it will. So we have the land purchased for the new school. So we'll get that. Hopefully we'll get started on that right away. But going down the road, you know, if more families are choosing this, we may not have to build as many schools or build them as quickly,
right,
if we have students that are learning remotely and not physically in the buildings.
But you might have to put a little bit more technology in these
schools.
Yeah, the technology will probably change.
Yes, sir, it will. The technology, it changes weekly still. We get better. The more that we learn, the more we do. From our end, what's available, what the parents are comfortable, the students are comfortable doing, that changes regularly. So who knows what that's going to look like 5 years from now. We just know we have to be ready. We have to have the infrastructure to support that, whatever it may be. So our technology department, I see that growing. I see our remote teaching staff, our vital teaching staff growing in the next 5 years. So we're making plans for that. We'll need space for those people.
Yep.
So we still, you know, where are we going to house if we do have a thriving remote learning center? You know, where are we going to house them? What's that going to look like? So we're making those tight plans.
Well, those are exciting plans and stimulating to think about in terms of the new challenges that they present to the county and to the district, but really important planning. Well, talk a little bit about what you can see in the months ahead in terms of budgets. I know it's a challenging time. The state has been challenged, but the state has a big surplus right now. I was talking to Senator Bailey about that just some time ago, and clearly there have been some good surprises, yes, too. So what are you anticipating in terms of budgets?
So, and the same thing here, you know, what the state has the surplus, but, you know, our county, fortunately, has not seen that decline in revenue, either sales tax or property tax, from the reports that I've seen or that I've heard. We have managed this fairly well. We have good fiscal leaders in our county, in our community. So we have managed this very well. So what I anticipate, I think, from the governor, let's start there. That drives the BEP, drives our budget.
Yeah.
The governor is going to put a 4% raise. What we're hearing is going to put a 4% raise in for faculty, staff, teachers. We believe, and you know, here, and I think that's supported by, I know our school board supports this, but I think our county commissioners do as well, that it's all of our people, not just our certified staff, but our non-certified, the maintenance, bus drivers, food services.
They've had challenges too all during this.
Our teaching assistants, our secretaries, everyone. It takes everyone to pull together to do this. So when we do a 4% raise, we want to do that 4% raise for everybody, not just for our certified people or those that are in that BP, but for our whole team. That will take a commitment from our county commission. So as we move forward with the budget process, whatever number that comes out that the governor puts in, again, I anticipate 4%. We will be asking for that. We'll be going to our county commission and asking for that 4%. I'll be asking to move forward with a new school. That, again, we've got to get that back on the agenda.
Absolutely.
We have to get that in front of them, and we need to be started. We've got to start on that process now, going through the bid process, choosing a contractor, and breaking ground, just so that we're ready to open that up as soon as possible. So those are some of the immediate challenges. We also know that, well, using some of the money that we've gotten from the federal government this year, we're going to be able to take on in the school system side lots of the deferred maintenance projects, things that we would normally be asking the county commission for, we have funds that we can take those on and update some of the big needs we have in the school that we're coming in the next 3, 4, and 5 years. We're going to be able to knock those out in the school system. So I'm hoping the county commission will recognize that and be able to put that money towards our people. We are a people-driven business of people. You know, that's what we do. People is the major part of our budget. It's 85% of our budget. So I'm hoping when we go in front of the county commission, they're going to recognize that and can support those efforts, just in salary, not just salary increases. We'll also have some instructional needs that will increase. We're trying to use our funds wisely that we're receiving from the state and federal government to purchase those resources to take it off of our local economy, so that our local people can take care of our local people is what we're hoping.
Well, that's great. It's challenging to look ahead, especially in these tough times, but, you got to be doing it. And that planning is really important. I compliment you on the outreach and looking forward that far. Well, one of the things that I've been sort of challenged with in terms of thinking about student experiences during this time is extracurricular activity. Some sports have been able to continue, but a lot of students haven't had a normal year of extracurricular activity, and that's really important for their development.
It really is. For a lot of our students, the extracurricular activity is their outlet. It's where they thrive. They do, you know, they might struggle in the classroom, but they do really well on the football field, the basketball court, the soccer field, in the band, in the chorus, a drama, whatever that may be. And this has been an abnormal year. We were very fortunate. We had the full football season. We were able to have a full girls soccer season in the fall. We're wrestling. We're in the middle of basketball season. We're competing. We're there. We're hoping to see that to the end. Same thing when it rolls around to baseball, softball, track, you know, all of our spring sports that come into play. We are hoping, we're praying those student athletes have that opportunity to have those seasons. Sitting here right now, I don't see anything that's going to impact that.
Right.
We know that if, you know, you have a team member that has COVID or that exposes others, that, you know, the quarantine, that's become kind of secondhand for our coaches and our players.
So you might have a game rescheduled to a little different time.
But absolutely, you know, those are things we have dealt with throughout all of this. We anticipate that's going to continue to happen. Some of the other extracurriculars are still a struggle, you know, just because of the physical space and what has to go into that, having a band concert or a chorus concert or a play. There's so much that has to go into those type things. It's still a challenge. And that's unfortunate for the students that we have now. But our teachers are working really hard to provide that experience to whatever extent they can. And we're going to continue to support that process.
And I think that'll be back to normal hopefully next year, or at least a new normal, closer to normal than we are now. And yeah, I remember in my school days, my high school days especially, those extracurriculars made all the difference in the world.
Yes, it's why a lot of kids come to school.
Yeah.
It's why they're there.
Yeah.
And we need to support that for them. And for a lot of our students, it's how they're going to get to college.
Yeah, absolutely right. So, absolutely. It's really important. And we'll all look forward to when that gets back on, on a normal plane. Well, it has been a pleasure to have you with us today. We have been talking to Corby King, the Director of Schools for Putnam County. And Corby, thank you for the great job you're doing. And we want to say a special thanks to the teachers and the other workers in the county school systems and the private schools that have done such heroic work this year.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me today, Dr. Bell. And absolutely, the real, you know, those in the system that need that thanks and appreciation, it is. It's our teachers, our faculty, our staff members, our bus drivers, those who are out there every day connecting with students and making sure they have an experience. It's been a good year in the midst of all the chaos.
Well, thanks for being here. We'll look forward to having you back soon.
Thank you.